Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey, sports fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to the B-Ball Breakdown live show. Coming at you on a Monday morning, as always, joined by Andrew Combo Salop to discuss the latest in the NBA. Combo, it's been way too long. How's it going, my man?
Everything's good. How are you?
Good. I'm still jet lagged. Who knew that five-hour time difference and at traveling 18 hours in a plane would have such a profound effect on someone? But I'm getting closer to the time zone I need to be in, and my brain is slowly functioning at more optimal levels.
That's how it goes when you travel.
Always, always. So how? What did I miss? We got to get into it. What did I miss?
I mean, we're going to talk about the OG trade. The Warriors and Lakers have continued to struggle, and there's a lot of talk around Pascal Siakam at this point when it comes to trade targets.
Oh, lots to talk about, lots to unpack. You can see my mad scientist hair is in full force right now. I got to get to the gym. Haven't been to the gym for like probably 2 weeks now, and my body is craving some bench press.
Okay, that's good. Bench press is always good. You know, you could always work out without the gym too.
Now you tell me. I could have done that. You're right. Anyway, maybe I'll do that. I don't know. There's something about going to the gym, but you have to get to the gym at the right time because God knows Planet Fitness is a hellhole if you go when it's busy. So,
yeah.
But we'll Planet talk about that is, later on in the show.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely like rush hour times, right? I'm sure it's like 4 to 9. It's probably crazy.
Believe it or not, 4 isn't too bad yet. It kind of, you can get into 5 o'clock where it's not quite there. But yeah, like 5:30 till 8 or so, 8:30 is
crazy.
And then in the morning, it's bad too early. But nonetheless, all right, let's talk about the, I've been going through a bunch of clips from OG with the Knicks so far. Some pretty impressive numbers, the difference in terms of what it was like before he got there and what it was like after. Let me just share a couple of those numbers with you as I get my notes up here. So overall, the Knicks offensive rating over the whole season is 117.7, ninth. And it was about that, 117.3 before OG. Now, since OG got there, their offensive rating has bumped up to 120.8. which hasn't really moved the needle as far as ranking because everyone's now been scoring. It's been unprecedented. We can get into that in a minute. But the defensive rating is the biggest difference. So before OG, it was 115.5. Since the trade, with four games under their belt, it's 103.1. I don't think I've ever seen a 12-point difference like that in net rating for defense before. So that's what we got to start with, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they brought in a guy who you could throw at some of the East's best wings. Will he totally stop Giannis? No. But Jason Tatum versus OG averages about 19 points per game, well below his average. Another guy, Jimmy Butler. We all know how playoff Jimmy gets. Another guy that the Knicks could possibly throw at Jimmy. So, yeah, he's going to really help them in the playoffs. And you mentioned the defense, but the offense, like right from the bat, I mean, the Knicks are now 4-0 with OG. And you could just see that Jalen and Julius, their two pillars, have so much more room to operate on that side.
Sure. Well, before we get too excited about the offensive stuff, you know, I had some other numbers there as far as usage. Did I write it down or I got to look it up? God darn it. So they go from, and I think it's worthwhile to talk about RJ Barrett versus OG Anunoby and how that all works. And
as basketball players, are you saying?
Well, as function in the offense, you know, it basically is what I'm saying, because the usage rates, did I just collapse? Where did that tab go? God damn it. Here it is. So the usage rate with RJ Barrett with the Knicks was at 26.6% usage percentage. And that is in line with, you know, Randall at 28.7 and Brunson at 27.6. So you had this like triumvirate at the very, very top, right, who were dominating the possessions. You suddenly go from that to what is he? OG is at 13.3 usage rate. So suddenly you're taking a whole huge chunk of someone who needed the ball and used a lot of possessions and goes away. And then you're getting the more pure version, I suppose, of the Knicks offense, which is, you know, Randall and Brunson. So that is, I think, also opened up some things. On the margins, they're better offensively. They've seen in the last four games. But I think that that's another, just functionally, it's a lot different because – Well, you can, you know, what are your observations so far? What is OG bringing offensively to the 5-on-5 scheme that perhaps they weren't getting as much with Barrett?
I mean, the most efficient three-point shot or the highest value three-point shot, as everybody knows, is the corner three, not only because it's a little bit closer, but it spaces the floor. So it gives that team so much more gravity when it comes to the corner, and he's just knocking that down, catch and shoot at a high level. And RJ was not a guy that he could do that. Also, RJ operates in the same space a lot as Julius, so that's a big thing as well. I just think it's a better fit overall with their two pillars.
For sure. And we saw Randall now has taken a lot of that usage percentage and gone up to 33.2 in the last four games. And so I don't know how ecstatic I am, honestly, about that. I feel like Randall has there's a ceiling there in terms of how much benefit they get out of him. And by the way, I'm sure all Knicks fans can commiserate, is that he'll have these moments where he plays like four awesome minutes where he's aggressive on offense. He's getting good high percentage shots. He's dishing the ball too and becoming a good focal point of an offense. And then he'll go on like a 2-minute bender where he takes terrible shots, turns the ball over, doesn't get back on D. It's like Jekyll and Hyde so often that it makes me worried about what happens in the playoffs.
When it comes to processing the game and for players that are all-star level, because he is in that tier, he's definitely on the lower level of all-star players when it comes to reading, reacting, and processing the game of basketball.
Absolutely. Well, you know, before I forget, if you want to ask a question and have it answered by us, Super Chat on YouTube is the way to go. It helps us keep the lights on and the show going. We really appreciate that. And we have our first one. The problem is it's a total left turn from the Knicks. Should we take a break from the Knicks for a second? And
yeah, we'll get back to the Knicks.
Okay. So Alan wants to ask about Alan Tran. Thank you so much, Alan, friend of the breakdown. The Warriors are a disaster, but between CP3, Wiggins, Kuminga, and Moody, they have assets, picks, and contracts. They need to target Markkanen. So we've been hearing a couple things. We're also hearing about maybe Siakam. I think I might have a better pick, better solution than all of those. You want to hear it?
Go ahead.
What about getting Brogdon from Portland?
Well, we were just talking about the Knicks. I want to see the Knicks get Brogdon.
Okay, so they already had Quickly, who you would have liked to have in that role, and now you want to put Brogdon instead.
Right, runner-up of Sixth Man of the Year. You trade him, bring in the Sixth Man of the Year.
Okay. I mean, certainly Brogdon has that seasoning that Quickly doesn't quite have yet. But by the way, I love Quickly.
But Coach Nick, it's not even like you don't have to compare it to Quickly. They now have nothing there at that spot, you know? Right. So you're adding.
Right. And I guess in theory, yeah, they're not making the deal for OG without Quickly. Right. It seemed like, and by the way, we have been talking about, just to wrap up the Knicks thing a little bit more, you can go back 2 years and I said they needed to trade Barrett. I think I've been saying it for 2 years maybe now. And I'm saying about Randall as well. But at the very least, you got to optimize all the way around Randall if you're going to keep him. And that's what they were doing. So
right.
Anyway, so I'm thinking that Brogdon would be a nice way to cover for CP3, who's injured again with a fractured wrist for a while. And that was probably known. I mean, it might have been a random. I got to look at the actual injury and how it happened. But the bottom line is CP3 cannot stay healthy. And I think that was probably why it wasn't a good gamble to sign him in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, he's leading their second unit pretty well, but I think we've said for a while now that he wasn't the greatest fit with Draymond or Steph for different reasons. And, you know, the problem is with the Warriors is that I have to look more into their assets, picks, and contracts that Alan is talking about, but CP3 and Wiggins don't have any trade value, really. And Kuminga and Moody are good young players, but they haven't shown enough yet. So you're almost looking at them like NBA draft prospects. Like, we take their potential and we believe they could be this, but they haven't been this yet. So how much trade value do they really have, even though I personally believe in them?
Well, you know, the Warriors fans are an interesting bunch, to say the least. And, you know, they love Kuminga. He had he went scorched earth and started calling out Kerr, saying, I don't understand why I'm not playing more, yada, yada. You know, it's always nice to play like the Pistons and then get your full 36 minutes and feel good about it, right? But and then Steph even came out and said, I talked to him about it. I know I'd be frustrated too, which was giving him some validation. But then also, you can't bring that out into the public. You got to protect the team, which is another important thing. So I would be wondering if they're looking to shop Kuminga, just like sort of that. He's just not happy with his role. And they know they can't give him much more than what they're giving him already. And if it's going to cause, you know, issues like this that goes in the media, then they might just make a move. That said, Kuminga will have great games on in the box score. There's no question. You know, high field goal percentage points, you know, rapid points, amazing plays. But he'll still make some of the more confounding plays as well and mixed in all that stuff. And there's no question that Steve Kerr is looking at this going, can I trust him to play in a tough game against Denver down the stretch when I know he might throw the ball in the stands or he might step out of bounds, you know, or he might just, you know, get out of control and take a terrible mid-range shot. Like that's that. Those are, you know, significant concerns that you probably don't have maybe as much with Wiggins, which is what happened in that Denver game when they went with him as they lost an 18-point lead in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, but if you end up if you want to maximize this era, I think you have to play Kuminga and Moody to raise their trade value at the least. Oh. And if you're not raising their trade value, you have to go with them for the future as well. So he played really well in that first half. So I understand his frustration, but I understand your side as well that he doesn't have total trust in Kuminga yet.
Exactly. Now, Kuminga, I think, has a huge upside or huge value in the league. I think most people would love to get him, you know, for whatever, whether or not it works where he goes. So they're in a good situation there if they want to trade him. Like they have a maximum value right now, I think, as far as the perception of Kuminga goes. You know, I was going to do a video, but I don't know, you know, how many people want to watch it to explain that little point I made about why maybe he doesn't get his 33 minutes a game because there's just moments where it's confounding. But that I don't know if I don't know if I want to watch it. I don't know if I want to do that to him. We'll see. But Moses Moody is the guy who probably should be more frustrated because he's getting some DMPs and really getting yanked around the rotation when he's a guy that could probably help you more than some of the guys above him at this point. And that's confounding too. So, you know, Steve Kerr is certainly getting his share of abuse out there in the social media sphere. And I, you know, whether or not it's merited or not, they're definitely aware of what the numbers look like and what the lineup data looks like. So, you know, when they're trying to fashion some of these lineups, they know if it's working or not ahead of time. And so it's always been that way with him, no matter how many times he's won, you know, how many championships he's won, they're always trying to criticize him. It's an interesting, you know, situation with the Warriors fans.
I mean, Darvin Ham is going through this as well. When you're with a high profile team, you know, you're going to find yourself plagued with criticism if your team is losing, no matter what. It doesn't really matter. So that's just something you deal with when you have a team that's in the spotlight or you're coaching Steph Curry.
Yes, exactly. And by the way, you're right. You know, the clock is ticking. Curry had a pretty bad game last night and they got hammered. So they need a secondary scorer off the dribble, somebody else that can create. Now, Brogdon doesn't necessarily become that either. Chris Paul wasn't really much of that as well. They would need somebody like, you know, who could, you know, like Kuminga can kind of do that, right? He can put the ball down on the ground and go and get some buckets. But
Zach LaVine?
Zach LaVine is another intriguing case where, you know, do they send back like Clay? Like, I don't know how that works.
Because why would the Bulls take Clay?
I don't know, but I'd much rather see Zach LaVine. Like, I don't know how you have Clay and Zach LaVine.
Clay has no value right now.
I know. So, unless it's just part of the package for salary and whatever, because you know what I mean? That's part of it too. They, you know, they give him a first and Clay or whatever, you know, because there's going to be some salary matching. Now, but I would love to see Zach LaVine like on a winning team once and for all. Now, that said, are the Warriors a winning team? I don't know, but they certainly have a better pedigree than the Bulls over the last 10 years. And I think that he's probably done. He's just not, his heart isn't into it. He hasn't been able to find that kind of, you know, motivation to play better, you know, at a high level until he gets on a better team. So I would like to see that.
Yeah. There's some guys, you know, Brogdon's a guy, Pascal's a guy, Zach's a guy, obviously Zach and Pascal are, you know, a little bit better players than Brogdon probably at this point in terms of talent, but I want to see all those guys on contenders. It was like the Eric Gordon thing for years, just on those losing Rockets team. Like, you wanted to see him fit on a team, and he thought he got this chance with the Suns this year, but that's another disaster in itself.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I wanted to take a second to tell you about how fun it is to download Prize Picks and discover how much fun it is by making skill-based, real money fantasy sports entries, and best of all, you're only competing with yourself. Prize Picks offers frequent discounts, bonuses, and other exciting offers. Players can enjoy community-wide promotions, including Taco Tuesday and Flex Friday. I love that you can choose two or more players from any sport, pick more or less on their projected stats, and place your entry. I went bold this weekend by picking Kirk Cousins to throw for more than 275.5 yards, go Vikes, And Justin Fields, less than 184 and a half yards, bear down. And will add a whole new level to my game-watching experience as I hope some of these guys throw that ball down the field a lot. Go to prizepicks.com/CLNS and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/CLNS. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy. But speaking of Siakam, I don't know how great of a fit that would be on the Warriors, to be honest.
There's an issue with Siakam, and I agree with you. I think when you're playing read and react offense, I don't think that might be the right situation for a LaVine, a DeMar DeRozan, or a Siakam. Like, they're just not that type of player.
You know what? I can, in my mind's eye, picture LaVine playing off the ball and attacking on the catch, getting closeouts and off of Curry gravity better than, like, the Siakam. Like, will Siakam, can he exist in the sort of their timing and motion offense as right. well? I don't know.
It wasn't a fit for the Kings either, though.
Who? For Siakam? Right. Exactly. Yeah. And then also, I think what they wanted back. And he's just not a shooter. Like, if I'm trying to picture who the Warriors would want to bring in, it would be someone A, that can create off the dribble, but then also shoot, which is LaVine. LaVine would be the guy that would probably really, really help them. And can they plug him in a way defensively that he can just be a net neutral there? I think so. Draymond coming back, they have enough pieces around that can kind of cover on that end. And we've seen every once in a while, we've seen Zach LaVine actually play good defense. And there is a defender in there that's decent.
He's athletic enough, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's insane. On the athletic ability. So yeah. I guess, you know what? I think you just talked me into LaVine being the guy they need to get.
Okay. Well, you know who I like the fit for when it comes to Siakam?
Who?
The Dallas Mavericks.
Ooh. Now that's interesting.
I think they're playing more in transition these days. And I think Pascal could really tap into what he was with Toronto when Kawhi was there, like finishing a lot of transition. And I think that's a really nice fit with Luka and Kyrie and gives them some defense on the perimeter as well.
Can you hear that? Did that come through?
Yeah. Your applause. I appreciate it.
Like, that, I'm never sure
you
how
that's the works. Applause, right? Because that was,
yeah, it was
great.
Giving you,
that was a great trip.
All right.
By yours truly.
And that was clean. It sounded clean, right?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah.
Sometimes I'm doing other shows and it comes out all garbled. Anyway, I like that. I really do like Siakam at in Dallas. By the way, the Allen's suggestion about Markkanen on the Warriors, I think, is also a good one. I think Markkanen would fit really well. And just
Definitely. Markkanen probably fits well anywhere.
Yeah.
Because he's good on the ball. He's good off the ball. He could shoot. He could defend multiple positions. I mean,
yeah.
Who can't use a guy like Markkanen, you know?
Exactly. So I like Markkanen. It reminds him that they passed up on Orlando.
See?
Wagner.
Right. So see, like, that's the thing. Like, Siakam and Markkanen are probably similar levels of talent, but fit-wise, Siakam is a lot harder to find a place with a lot of teams just because he's not going to be your best player creating with the ball, and he doesn't provide gravity off the ball. So it's always an interesting fit with Siakam, even though he's an all-NBA level player some years.
I agree. And mostly it's like the shooting. He's just struggled from shooting, and, you know, it's clear to me, feet are too wide, doesn't have great rhythm, the alignment is not there either. Come, Pascal, let me help you next summer. I think I can get him back. I can get him up to 35, 36 easy. That's the issue. You'd want to have some stretch shooting. You want to kind of recreate the Wiggins that they got when they won the title. And Wiggins right now, if it's what happened last year, it's just something's is a cloud over his head. He's not been able to kind of reconnect to what he was or at some point earlier in his career. And if they can't get it, then they got to move on. They don't have time.
Yeah, I don't know who you wants Wiggins at this point, but maybe he could go home to Canada. Maybe he's the best in Canada.
Maybe.
Like RJ just had 37.
Yeah, RJ looked really good there. We'll get back to the Knicks and the OG stuff too, because I think I have some more to wring out of that jersey. But we have the Drew Show. Thank you, Drew Show, the best friend of the breakdown. Great to see you out here. Thank you so much for the.
No.
He says, say what you want about the Knicks, but Becky Hammon's dragging Jalen Brunson looks worse and worse by the day. He balls out. I take her over Pop, though.
Ooh. No.
Wow, he's lighting Pop on.
We appreciate the super chat, the Drew Show, first and foremost, but Becky Hammon did not drag Jalen Brunson.
Uh-oh.
By saying he can't be a 1A dude on a championship team, there's about 495 players that can't, and there's a bunch of all-stars that can't, and there's even all NBA players that can't. I don't think she was dragging him at all. I just think she believes that he's not a player that could be 1A on a championship team. How many guys in the league could truly be that?
I don't know, man. Because here's the thing. It's like, well, what?
I mean, even if she's wrong, I don't think that's dragging him.
Okay. And by the way, the focus is for her on stature, on height, right? That's really what she's saying, right?
No, she's just saying that she doesn't believe Jalen Brunson could be the best player on a championship team.
But if I'm not mistaken, I'm going to do the combo finger point.
Yeah, that's good. You become most like the five people you hang around. So you must have been hanging around combo a lot.
Well, hopefully I start to look like some of the five people I hang around, because that would be good for me. By the way, we really could have used two in Buenos Aires, and we would have really pulled it out. But I'm going to edit some stuff together. If you hadn't known, I was in Buenos Aires for 10 days coaching a 45 and over team. And they were going to let Combo play anyway. It all fell through, unfortunately. And man, do we need another ball handler and someone who could score. I'm going to do a video on it. It was interesting, to say the least. But the thing about, no, I think that Becky Hammon followed up with that thought process by saying, like, you know, there's only been two titles, you know, with lead guards under 6'2", whatever that stat was. I think
Steph and Isaiah. Oh, well, Isaiah's not under 6'2", so I don't know who the other one is.
Chauncey Billups? I think Isaiah was the one, and then...
Chauncey Billups?
Who?
Chauncey Billups?
Yeah, he's probably like 6'4", isn't he?
Yeah, he's big. That's like the only team in probably the last 20 years that won a championship without a top five guy.
Right. Okay. And so, you know, so she's not wrong. Like whether or not she's dragging Jalen Brunson, she's not necessarily wrong if you're just looking at the macro sense of like what teams have won. But you always hate to see somebody, you know, put some sort of limit that's kind of arbitrary and random in a way as well, where, you know, who knows? Maybe he'll prove he'll become the exception to the rule. But a lot of times that kind of criticism of a player is like they're not like tough enough, right? Like a lot of times that's why
he's tough. Him and Julius are tough.
Right. And so Brunson's probably the toughest player in the league, I would think, like pound for pound. I don't know if anyone's tougher than him. I wouldn't fuck around.
Playoff Jimmy.
What's that?
Playoff Jimmy is tougher than him.
Playoff Jimmy? Okay, I'd like to see that. I'd like to see them square off nose to nose and see who's going to actually...
Jalen is tough, though. He is very tough, man.
Yeah, and so I look at that, and I also see him with a post-up game that's probably the best post-up game in the NBA right now. Yes, you heard that, and I'm going to do the video. Maybe I'll do that video. No, I got to do the OG video, one on Jalen Brunson.
I think Jokic is the best post player in the game, among a lot of other facets.
I'm telling you, I don't know. I'm talking about for sheer post footwork in the post. I mean, I'll do the video. It's the top four guys or whatever, and I'll put Jokic in there. Who else am I going to put in there?
Alperen Şengün.
Yeah, Şengün, Jokic, and then I guess I'm
Luka.
210 people right now.
Luka. Luka's tough in the post.
Luka is great because of the passing too. So you got to throw that in there. So
well, Jokic has that same ability as a passer.
Yeah, and so does Şengün. They all do. I mean, by the way, that makes you a better post-up player because you don't know if they're going to pass or not.
Yeah.
So there you go.
100%.
Your answer.
It puts the defense at a conundrum. You can't double Jokic when you need to double him.
Right. Well, do you see last night, right? He scored like 9 points and had 16 assists. So I have to go through that footage. I'm assuming it's going to be because they were doubling him and trying to get out of his hands. And he's like, sure, please. Right, he would probably love that stat line every night.
You know, I mentioned Jimmy, but him and Jimmy are like two stars that it's really apparent they don't care about stats. They do it when they have to win, and obviously Jokic's numbers are ridiculous, but they don't care. They're there to win. They're not there for stats.
Right. So at any rate, but you know, Pop probably as a little filler on the end of that when he says he take Becky over Pop. I think Pop might be toward the end. I mean, I think we all agree he's on the end of his career here, and it's probably maybe time at some
point. Didn't he just sign a deal?
You know what? That sounds familiar too. And I don't know. You know, listen, if I was in a situation that I had been coaching all this time and I still feel like I can coach and I'm 70, what is he, 73? Something like that.
He gets to coach Wemby. That's a different experience.
Yeah, but he's 74. You know, at some point, I'd be like, let's let somebody else take a shot at this. And you know, I think, but I get it. I probably would be in the same situation where I just want to keep coaching until I'm in the grave.
Maybe Becky Hammond. She's on the screen.
Right, absolutely. And Becky, you know, she's proved herself to be a great coach as well. All right, we have another super chat. Let's get to that one before it gets too late in the game. King Jaffe Joffer, thank you so much for the super chat. If the Warriors draft LaMelo or trade down for Halliburton, who they worked out and loved, they'd have their actual young ace.
Yes, great point.
Yeah, because that LaMelo draft, is that the same one as Halliburton?
Yeah, Halliburton, a lot of teams passed that Halliburton that shouldn't have, which yeah. I was saying during the draft. That's not Monday morning quarterbacking.
It's a tough one, man. It's tough to deal with. What are you going to do? You know, the draft is a crapshoot, right? And sometimes they sneak through and you know, it's I guess it's only your fault, quote unquote, or you're doing a bad job if it's over enough time and enough picks where you keep blowing them, right? Because otherwise you're going to miss, you know, everyone's missed, you know, good picks in their career without question.
Like, yeah, like OKC has done a great job, but Poku might have been a miss, right?
I thought Poku was like developing nicely. Now
I like Poku, but you're right. You know, I mean, they took him late first round. So, I mean, it's not like he has first overall pick expectations. So,
yeah, but right. There's no question that, well, LaMelo is interesting because he's been also injured all the time. And I don't think it'd have been different in the Warriors, but certainly Halliburton would have been that way. Or again, if it was, Wagner, Mo's brother.
Yeah, I mean, he shows some stuff in the NBA that he never showed in college.
What the heck?
Franz
Wagner. Why? I mean, this is my, let's be my jet lag. I was like, what the heck is his first name? I did an interview with him last year. Do y'all see it? Go watch it. It's a great piece of content.
Yeah, he's he showed a lot in the NBA that he didn't show at Michigan.
Why?
He got better. He improved.
Okay,
I see what you're saying. I mean, the spacing of the NBA, the style of play in the NBA is totally different, and the choppy nature of college basketball is a tough place to evaluate talent, but some players do it both places.
Is it Beeline? Was Beeline his coach? We gotta look at that. Someone tell me. Because we hear this a lot about college coaches, certainly at a certain age, where they'll say, it's not my job to develop players, it's my job to win. And I think we talked about this before. I don't understand why those two things aren't synonymous. You know what I mean? What's the point of like this offense and limiting your players when, you know, you need them to have as much skill as possible to then win more games? It doesn't make any sense to me. So, and we know this, we've heard a lot of coaches say this. So in my mind, Franz, did I ask him about it? Like, I almost feel like I might've asked him, like, did you have all these skills in college and just weren't allowed to show them? I don't think he would have lit up his coach, but that's the interesting issue is, are they put in the box? Are they forced to play like a certain way because the coach doesn't have imagination, and all of a sudden, you know, all this explodes. You don't think that he suddenly in one summer developed the floater and the three and off the dribble stuff?
I think there's some of that. I see what you're saying, but I definitely think he added craft to his game over time.
Okay. I mean, and that's true. We saw that. I did a great video a couple of years ago on Donovan Mitchell, who
didn't
seem to be an elite scorer in college and then becomes a 20-point-a-game scorer almost overnight.
I was somewhat familiar with him in high school. Like, he was a crazy athlete, but I didn't see that level of skill like in high school or college, you know? Like,
yeah.
He was always a ridiculous athlete, but the level of skill he shows in the NBA is just different.
Absolutely. And I went through it and we saw, like, you know, there was evidence of what he could ultimately do in the pros, but he wasn't great at it. And it probably just took, you know, some more focus, getting to be out of college or getting away from the college game where all you're doing all day is working on your game. And I also would suspect, you know, some better training. And that's a huge advantage when you finally get that once and for all full time.
Yes.
All right.
I agree.
Drusha wants to say that I am the Vitruvian Man, which is interesting because that would be the drawing that, do you know the Vitruvian Man? You know who that is?
No, I don't.
It is Leonardo da Vinci. You know, that famous drawing of the arms. And, you know, I think he's making fun of my hair. Oh, well. But listen, if I look like the ideal man that da Vinci drew, then thank you so much, Drew. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Drew.
But anyhow, all right. Do we have any other ones? Not yet. No other super chats yet.
Coach, I feel like I'm always tough on the super chatters. Do you think that's the case?
You feel like you're always tough on them? I don't think you're tough on anybody. I mean, okay, you might be tough on the court, but I don't think you're tough.
Thank you, Coach Nick. Thank you. Yeah, well, we appreciate all the super chatters.
You know, it's fun to be tough on people, right? Well, it's not fun. I don't like to be tough. I want to be welcoming and helpful as much as I possibly can to fellow humans.
You know, I never thought I was that tough on people, but whenever I go on another podcast, they go like, you're really tough on people. You tell it how it is. I never thought I was like that guy who was like, I don't know. It's always tough on people.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And it's interesting. Well, and then Greg wants to think that I said that Pop was senile. I didn't say he was senile. Come on.
He never said. What is this thing that we do where we, like, if we say something that isn't the most positive thing in the world, people throw it against you like the other total way? Like, there is no nuance in society these days.
I know.
I was just tough on another listener. See what I mean? This is what I'm doing.
That's absolutely right. I think Greg's laughing right now a little bit, but you know, it's almost like that Adam Sandler movie, Anger Management. Did you ever see that movie?
No, but I was watching a little bit of Waterboy with my son. So,
because I told you to watch it, we watched it a few weeks ago.
No? Oh, really? Maybe subconsciously.
I know. Maybe. By the way, that movie holds up. It's hilarious. We were laughing out loud.
It is funny.
LOLing.
Yeah, it is funny.
Now I'm not into all the other Sandler movies that much. I'm not sure I ever watched Happy Madison. I'm not sure I ever watched.
You mean Happy Gilmore?
Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison.
Happy Gilmore is really good.
Is it?
Yeah. Did you see Hustle?
I've not finished it.
Oh, Hustle's good. Hustle's good.
Well, you know what the problem is? It gave me so much anxiety that I had to stop watching it, which, by the way, tells you it's a good movie because, I mean, when he gets locked in the trunk and, like, this whole life is falling apart before our eyes and he's making bad decision after bad decision. And it's so I don't want to live in that space. Even though they were doing a good job of presenting it, it was making me feel anxiety filled.
Yeah. My mom gets anxiety watching every basketball game ever.
Is there a happy ending to that movie?
Yes, Hustle. Yeah, of course.
Oh, okay, so maybe I'll try and get through it. I mean,
doesn't most movies with Adam Sandler have a happy ending?
I guess, but this one. Wait, am I thinking about Uncut Gems or am I thinking about Hustle?
Hustle is with Anthony Edwards and one of the brothers that play for the Raptors, whose other brother's in the league. They play for the Spain national team. Hernan Gomez.
Okay. You know what? Forgive me.
No, what's his name?
I'm talking about the one where he's the diamond, Uncut Gems, then, right? That's what I'm talking about. Where he's locked in the trunk and he's.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about that.
Okay. So that's one. Now, the Hustle one is where he's a scout, right?
Yes.
Another one I haven't finished. I don't know why. It's something
Anthony
about
Edwards it. Anthony Edwards is great in that movie.
I'm going to go back to it. So, that one I can see being a happy ending. Uncut Gems is probably not a happy ending, right?
I didn't see that. I don't know.
Okay. Well, there you go. All right. We have another super chat. So we have Joe B. Tsurugi Azukino. I wonder if that's a anime thing that we don't know about? I don't know. But the question here is, or the comment is, how to explain the Lakers' recent skid, IST hangover, or Darvin's inability to coach being exposed, or a combination of both factors? So not only did the IST, the in-season tournament, result in a win for the Lakers, in a weird confluence of events, right? Like they were able to kind of, get in with with that weird call they gave to LeBron on a timeout, on a loose ball. But then they get all the way to the finals, whatever. But it also coincides with Vanderbilt coming back. So there's an interesting take out there that says that Vanderbilt coming back has gummed up the works for the offense and making it harder. It's interesting. We saw LeBron James say that we suck. I wish I had my comb. Did you see the combing of the hair or the brushing of the hair, LeBron, clip?
No.
You have not seen it?
No.
It is something to behold.
Have you guys saw him. I wanted to hear your take on the reporter asking him about Ricky Rubio right after a tough loss.
Oh, you know what? I didn't mind that so much because it was negative, the whole thing, and he was so upset. Let's, change the subject for a second and give it some levity or whatever. That didn't feel bad to me, but
it wasn't malpractice, but I thought it was bad timing.
I get it. The guy was not from America either, right? So sometimes they don't have,
context.
They don't read the room as well, maybe because of the language. I don't know.
Oh,
I can call up this.
I mean, they saw the game, and you could read body language. I don't know, man.
Okay. I mean, that's true. But I'm a little out of the box on that end where I'm like, oh, okay, maybe that's because you're trying to just, you know, let's give him something good to talk about. It's positive.
Yeah, I rather a tough question that relates to what's going on in the room, you know, than a.
Yeah. Oh.
What's going on here?
Here is the LeBron James coming to here.
What are we doing?
And if you can't see this, if you're listening to this, he's just like, he's like incessantly crushing his hair as he's talking quietly. It's just weird. I don't know. I couldn't get over that. But that was.
He's upset.
Yeah. He's upset.
He's really mad. You could tell. He's really upset.
Yeah. And by the way, that hair looks really good. I hope if I ever need it like that, I can.
But you know what? Not to make this like about how great LeBron is or anything, but you got to love it that he's in, what, 20 years in the NBA and he's still this frustrated over losing. Like, he really cares.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, if I was starting to do the video on the Lakers, they won last night. So it kind of was making me wonder, like, where are they going right now? Because I was kind of getting ready to show they're giving up open threes. It's really bad.
That's the tough thing about content, right? The narrative could change at any moment.
Absolutely. It's very, very tough. So I got a pin on it for a second to look at it, but I did see some of those advanced stats and looking at the numbers. And, you know, LeBron is might be part of the issue as well. I hate to say it, but even though he's playing well, he's putting up numbers. There seems to be some numbers there, the on off stuff, where AD is very much net positive and a lot of the other guys, but like LeBron is not. And that's interesting. We want to hear the number. I can call it up real quick. Let me grab it. I'll tell you overall in the season, if you look at the net difference between offensive rating and defensive rating on off, where is it? Where's LeBron? LeBron is, that's fascinating. It changed in like maybe two games. It was negative when I looked at it like a few days ago, and now it's plus 7.6. In fact, he's leading the team. So never mind. It's not LeBron. That is weird, though. I swear to God, it was negative. I was like, oh, I got to dig into this deeper, but maybe I don't. All right, never mind. What did I see? That's so weird. How did two games change it? But nonetheless. Anyway, so forget that. So they're going to do a trade. And this happens every year with LeBron teams or every other year where the coach is on this hot seat and, you know, Vogel wins a championship and then gets fired, which I thought is kind of ridiculous. They already had – how much would they prefer to have, like, Caruso and Kuzma right now? Like, it seems like that would be a nice fit for them.
Caruso's a nice fit for everybody, it feels like. He's kind of like – I mean, he's not the player marketing is, but he's one of those guys that would just help almost every NBA team, especially somebody who needs a connective piece on the offensive side and guard multiple positions on the defensive side.
Right. Now, if you watched the game last night, if you saw the Clippers and Lakers, I watched a lot of it. You know, a nice welcome injection to the lineup was Chris Wood. And I had said, the problem is I did this Lakers video a month ago, early in November, explaining that Chris Wood needed to be in there a lot more with LeBron and AD to anchor the backside of the defense. And then he's a ball handling guy. It hasn't borne out the last several games. When I looked at those numbers, it really wasn't a great three-man lineup. But last night, it was really valuable for them to have him grab rebounds and push the ball up a little bit on his own. So they got to be able to find more of that. I guess he's getting more back into the rotation. And that's really what is getting people frustrated, right? It's the rotations that Ham is not using. There's no adjustments in game. Is he the coach? Is LeBron the coach? It's always one of those questions.
Is he the coach is a crazy question.
Why? I think he tries to coach as much as the actual coach does, don't you think?
No, but I mean, Darvin Ham is the coach, though. But I see what you're saying. LeBron, all veteran players are somewhat of a coach, though.
Right? I mean, okay, that's fair, too. Yeah. But at some point, is it a pattern? And you know, why does it keep happening to the LeBron teams? I don't know. But I don't think – can they dig themselves out of this? What do you think?
Yes.
Okay.
I think they have a way better chance than the Warriors. Do I have them as favorites? No,
right.
Not at all. But I think they're still in the pool where – if you tell me they're raising the title at the end of the year, I'm not absolutely surprised because you have AD and LeBron, and if they're healthy, they always have a chance.
Right.
And then we have to see what they do in this trade deadline. With the Warriors, I really think it's over.
Yeah.
I don't think there's much wiggle room for them to make a move during the trade deadline.
But here's the thing. The Warriors like had the Nuggets down 18 in the fourth quarter, right? There's something there. They have ways of figuring out how to like hurt these really good teams and compete with them.
So they also lost that lead, which is huge issue.
They did in a very short order. So that's the other problem, right?
And then if they ever have to go against Denver, Jokic will dismantle them when it comes to the end of the game.
Jokic score a lot. and shut everybody else down. I mean, that would be the goal. And
he'll just destroy them.
Yeah, no, I mean, they'll let Looney go to work on him and do it with a pipe and whatever, and hit him a few times.
Joker never shows all his cards in the beginning of the game. No pun intended, or maybe there was some pun intended.
Okay, I hear you. Joker, because that Joker is a card in a deck. Get it?
But it's also the truth. Like, he goes to some stuff at the end of the game that he won't go for, like, the first three quarters.
Yeah.
And then he'll go, like, 5-1 pick and roll, 1-5 pick and roll. I'm just going to post you up. I'm going to play the short roll. I'm going to shoot a one-legged three from, you know, 80 feet out.
All right, here we got another super chat. Let's go to that one, and let me do this. Is it full screen so I can see everything? Okay, so the Drew Show wants to know, thank you, Drew. Did you find any Manus or Scolas in Argentina? I think I might have. I went to the Manu Ginobili court, which is late in Buenos Aires, and they have this, it's a really cool court where it's painted on it, and it's where everybody knows to go for pickup. And everyone was whispering, hey, you got to watch this guy. You got to check this guy out. It was like a high-level, you know, pickup game that we were watching. And I got to tell you, this kid's 17 years old and was handing it to these 20-year-olds who were pretty good. So this guy might be, you know, really good. I don't know if he's the next Campaso or whatever, but, you know, we'll see. So it was fun to kind of watch him and see him, you know, do his thing.
Yeah, those are two very good players. Skola had a long NBA career. Manu, one of the best lefties to ever play in the NBA.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I was actually talking to a coach who was involved with them, with the Golden Era team, about Manu and the notion of, you know, a lot of times coaches will get a player who will just throw kind of crazy passes and it's an amazing, amazing vision that they have and you kind of shrug and they're happy you have them. But my take on it was, well, can't we create players like that? Isn't there a way to develop that kind of passing? And I think most coaches say no. It's just one of those things that you're lucky to get. But I'm not convinced. And I'm still, you know, trying to figure out. I think I have to talk to Manu to figure out if
I think in this country, if we played more no dribble or one dribble full court to warm up, we would develop better passers.
Okay. Because I know I'll do drills where I'm like, oh, the only pass you can throw are crazy passes. You know, the crazier the better.
That's crazy, Coach Nick.
Yeah, I know. Crazy. With a K. And so I, you know, you kind of, you know, unlock some things and they have fun. It's an interesting diversion.
What is the definition of a crazy pass?
You know, like behind the head or like, you know, off your elbow. I don't know, whatever. And it can't just be a regular two-hand chest pass.
So it's like a turnover if you throw a chest pass?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Underhanded. I don't know, you know, through someone's legs. Whatever it is. And like, you know, because it's a personality thing, right? I think Manu, his personality was such that he derived pleasure from throwing passes to teammates that would yield buckets, right? And so if you had that kind of pleasure, you're going to try and throw as many different kinds as you can because you realize it's not easy to get those kind of buckets. Not everybody has that personality where they actually feel good about that. So there might be a way to lean a little bit more that way or get him get in touch with that a little bit, or maybe not. Maybe it simply is a personality thing. But if that's the case, then maybe we can identify more of that personality type and then teach them how to play basketball.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We got another one. Let's see here.
Super chats rolling today. Shouts to the super chatters.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Thank you so much. Upset New York Knicks traded IQ. I think they think IQ plus Brunson are too small to play together, even though the combo has been statistically good over 1,000 plus minutes. You know, again, the Thibodeau, I'm sure, has some notion of like, you know, when he was coming up, interestingly enough, the Bulls had to deal with Penny Hardaway and Nick Anderson for the Orlando Magic. And that was one of the first, like, really big backcourts. And so to respond to that, they brought in Ron Harper to have, again, alongside Michael Jordan.
One of the most underrated players I've ever seen.
And by the way, the timing isn't exactly right here how that works. But they realized that Ron Harper and Michael Jordan together would be what they needed to solve that problem against the Magic. And then it ended up giving them an advantage against a lot of other teams with a nice big backcourt that could play defense. So, you know, when that could very well be influencing Tibbs to this day, you know, and this notion that we can't have these small backcourts. But in reality, you can, you know. I mean, let's look at the two-man lineup data if I can find it real quick.
Whenever you think you can't do something, the trend will find a tipping point and it'll go that way. Like they used to say you can't win championships shooting three-pointers, right? Like,
right. Well, this thing, you can't win with a shorter guard, right?
I mean, that's what it is now, though.
What?
I mean, that's the trend that we're in now. So, yeah.
Right, exactly. All right, so if you want to see Brunson and quickly the two-man lineup in 377 minutes, it was a plus 11.6, you know, which I think in the grand scheme of things is probably really good for the most played lineups for them. You know, I'm looking at some of these are in the smaller sample size, but yeah, it's up there. So, yeah, there's no question they were getting a lot of mileage when they played them together, and they could definitely play together. Two dynamic guards. Again, Brunson will take the focus. He'll draw an extra player near him. He kicks it, and then you're getting it to a guy who can really break down defenses as well on the secondary market. That's really important because what we're learning with, like, the Warriors, for instance, is that Curry will create an advantage and then kick it, and then that guy who gets it, it was just losing his advantage right away, and we can't maintain the pressure. And that's key in today's NBA.
Yes. You know, I think that it was a lot to trade IQ, but sometimes you got to give up something good to get something good. And I do think it was the right move. I also think IQ is a better fit in Toronto than he was with the Knicks. So it's better for everybody involved, in my opinion.
Yeah,
so,
he already looks. I mean, I've seen some highlights. I have to get my eyes on some.
Yeah, I mean, him and Scottie Barnes is going to be a really fun mix. We've seen over the years that the little initiator, big initiator thing seems to work. Like, we're seeing it with Kyrie and Luka right now. Jamal Murray and Jokic just won a championship. Even back to LeBron and Kyrie, right? Like, a bigger guy that can initiate offense alongside a quicker guy that can initiate offense as well and kind of break the game wide open with their scoring ability.
For sure. And, you know, Toronto has won 3 of 4. The Knicks have won 4 in a row. So, like, this is a win-win for them, I'd imagine, and they both feel good about it. There's no question, Knicks fans, you should feel good, even though you don't have it quickly anymore. Feel good about, you know, swapping Barrett for OG. I think that's a big win for them as far as fit. We kind of talked about it earlier. And, again, you're getting a guy in Barrett who needed 27% usage rate. Now you're replacing that with half of that. And it's going to open up flow and make it easier for Brunson and Randall to get the best of what they do. Plus, you know, like, Barrett's finishing at the rim was terrible, and it was frustrating to watch. OG is much better than that.
Yeah, he's a better cutter. He's a better shooter. He's a better defender. It's just a way better fit with their top two guys.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we have Brian Cook. Thank you, Brian, so much. Thank you for everybody for being so generous today. Lakers caught lightning in a bottle last year against broken Grizz Warriors teams. Their roster is highly flawed, and their summer was overrated. I have to tell you, I kind of liked what they did, except for keeping – I kind of felt like they needed to get D'Lo and upgrade at that position. Turns out they kind of maybe need him with what they have now anyway. But I kind of like what they did on the margins. I thought it would short up some stuff, but man, it isn't working. And then the starting lineup that worked so well for them last year, they were kind of refused to play now.
Don't you think that the season has ups and downs, and we saw them get their ups with the in-season tournament, and now they're on their down, and don't you think they could just trend upwards again? I mean, sometimes it's good to take a little bit of an elevated perspective.
Yeah, I mean, they got to figure out some adjustments. They got to figure out, like, I guess, lineup stuff most of all. Reeves probably has to get back in the starting lineup. And, they have to remember that Chris Wood is, you know, it fits really well with them. So, yeah.
I mean, Reeves is their third best basketball player, right?
Who is?
Reeves is their third best basketball player.
I mean, probably, yeah, the way this is shaping up. Now, you know, Rui has to get healthy because I thought he was somebody who really helped them a lot and then could not figure it out again. Like, you know, almost like he started over from scratch when he should have been building on last year. So that's a frustrating thing. And that could have also been related to playing time as well. Like that, I listen, Darvin Ham deserves some criticism. He hasn't managed the lineups well enough. And then, you know, Gabe Vincent comes in and looks good for them when he plays, but he's, you know, it was a bust of a pick. They didn't know he's gonna get hurt, but man, it's killing them that he isn't playing at all. All right, let's get to Bron. We have another super chat. Have you checked out the zone the Jazz are running? The wings are spread out with backs towards the three. You were tagged under a video on Twitter. I did see this. And, you know, listen, I passed my stuff around a little bit and we talked, but that said, they could also be looking at what the Miami Heat did with their 2-3 zone with Lowry and Robinson with their butts to the sideline as on a 2-3. But it's very similar to my defense, the chase defense, which is what I had them facing the basket as well. It really helps to combat any kind of pin downs and off-ball screens and then take away cuts, and they can see the floor better. So I have seen it. I need to get deep into it. I've also seen Drew Holiday playing the center in a 2-3 zone for the Bucks. I think is something that was pointed out. I recognize there. Maybe Caitlin Cooper saw
it. He's just as strong as most centers.
Absolutely. Right. He's got a great center of gravity, and like it's low and it's strong. I mean, I'd seen like LeBron try to post him up, and he stood him up and kept him in where he was going or in place. So but I need to check it out a little bit more. Again, I'm a little bit light on the Jazz footage these days. You know, I get to that point in the season where I kind of just want to see, like, you know, teams that are executing well and playing well. But I will get to them as well and check it out. So, but I'm interested. So thanks, Bron, for pointing that out for sure. But again, we got to look at how we play defense. It's not working. I think the seven all-time greatest offensive ratings we've ever seen are all this year.
It's very interesting. You know, I was thinking about this, and maybe it's my connection to you that started this conversation in my own brain, but NBA offense from an individual level and a team level has far exceeded the evolution of defense at an individual level and team level.
For sure. I mean, step sliding doesn't work. Choppy step closeouts, hands high doesn't work. We need to get radical and figure out better ways, better footwork, better, you know, biomechanical motions. You know, we need to use a lot more. I say this all the time. We need to use a lot more of the offensive footwork on defense. That's going to level the playing field better. And honestly, I feel like what I developed with the playing behind the ball on a zone, it could also be a recipe that really helped level that playing field as well and cause the kind of havoc that you need to cause with the way the players are so good these days with the ball in hand.
You're the Elon Musk of defense, innovator, a forward thinker.
We're not using him. No, thank you. I do not want to be compared to him. All right, let's get to here. This is what's the word I'm looking for? I don't have one of those. No, that's good. I got to come up with a better bad sound effect. All right, the age of brevity. Thank you so much from Canada. What, if anything, is OKC missing to win a chip now?
I was nothing
about that. What's that?
Nothing but experience.
Right, because like you say to yourself, okay, they need one of those really tough first round, you know, seven game losses to like get them galvanized and then strengthen, and they're ready to go the next year. But maybe not. Maybe they don't need to go through that. Maybe they're ready to go do it now.
Chet filled every gap that team needed, from a pick and pop big, pick and roll big, and even more importantly, a guy who could protect the rim on the defensive side, which they were missing for years. And they got the guy SGA, who's tailor-made for the playoffs. Like, he's great in the regular season, but the way he gets into the mid-range and creates his own is just what you need in late shot clock and end-of-game situations. Oh, so
but Jalen Williams. With the,
I think they're ready. What'd you say?
The Jalen Williams without the Y in the I. That dude is just tough. He's the guy that's the X
factor. I mean, he's a future all-star.
For sure.
But yeah, you know, Chet filled every gap. SGA is the player that you need and in the playoffs.
Well,
so,
you know,
this episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Can they upgrade like Josh Giddey? Do they need to upgrade him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he doesn't fit well with SGA too well, and he's struggling this season. But how much trade value with all his off-the-court stuff does he have right now?
Right.
That's the only thing.
By the way, he actually is on low volume, up to 37% three-point shooting, but he doesn't have any gravity anyway. And you'd think that what you'd want alongside him is a guy who's just lights out, like, you know, like Luke, who's a lefty on Memphis? Kennard.
Bane?
Thank you. Like, Luke Kennard would be the guy you'd want alongside SGA.
Luke Kennard never gets opportunity like he should.
Yeah. I mean, he had it in L.A., and I think that was
too bad. Not really. Ty Lue didn't. Ty Lue used to play with his minutes.
Yeah, I guess so. I feel like I did see opportunity. Did more where he was a lead, playing lead guard off the bench. You know what I mean? And like getting, because he can handle the ball really well. But, yeah, I think he needs to get onto a – I mean, you know, here's a question. Will Memphis turn this around now with Ja?
I mean, it's been ups and downs, but they came out with a bang. I think so. I think they could get there.
Let me just see here. Since Draw came back, what's their record here? Do you know? Let's see here. Game logs. They are here in the games he's played. Well, they won four in a row. Then he didn't play, and then they lost two in a row, and they won. So that's 5-2, 5-3, 6-3. So they're 6-3 with him on the floor, and then he hasn't played in a couple of these games, you know, in and around there. So that pace would probably get them pretty close to the play-in tournament at the very least, right?
Yep. And yeah, you never know. They could go on another winning streak.
Yeah, it's too bad they can't get Steven Adams healthy. I don't know what Brandon Clark's situation is, if he's going to get healthy again, because if they add those two guys as well, then all of a sudden they're like, they might even be title contenders with that full team, I swear.
Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, so what I was saying is, like, thinking back to my point with OKC, they're in the, like, title pool. I wouldn't have them as the favorites because I think Denver will win, but they're one of those teams like the Lakers that have an outside chance, in my opinion.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it does feel like they're a little bit light. They need to have maybe like a little bit – they need to find a little bit more depth somewhere. But because that's where it's going to kill you too when you're getting down to some of the teams.
The playoffs, don't you usually only play 7-8 guys anyway?
Yeah, but like their eighth guy – is it Isaiah Joe? Who's your eighth guy? Is it Isaiah Joe? Let's see. You know, in terms of – or Kendrick Williams, you know.
There's some marketing talk.
That's the question. And I like Isaiah Joe. He seems aggressive in his moments. So and he's not intimidated. So that's big. But that's the question is, can you have on the margins a couple of those guys before you who don't have the respect of the referees perhaps, and, you know, what's going to happen deeper in the playoffs. But I think they're pretty good. They're really getting close. But they
How about marketing?
What?
How about marketing for them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, marketing fits anywhere he goes. But, yeah, that might be an awesome fit for them as well.
I wonder, sure. They must have enough with Josh Giddey and a bunch of picks to get him, right? Like,
I mean, or maybe do like Giddey for Brogdon or something like that. Is that insane?
I like Brogdon more in the Knicks. I don't know why. I feel like he fits the Knicks timeline more than OKC's really young. And it's almost like the Portland Trailblazers thing all over again. Not in the sense of that the Trailblazers are on the same level of play OKC at all, but just they're a bunch of younger players, you know?
Right. Well, but you know,
maybe that veteran leadership could help, but I don't know. I think I like marketing there better.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Let's see here. We have Joe B is saying right now for me, it's Wemby, Chet, and Jaime on the all rookie first team. Who do you see occupying those last two first team spots? Yeah. Jaquez has just been a revelation to me in the pros. I had said for the 4 years he was in UCLA watching him, he'd never get a chance to play that way. This athletic ability he has is a revelation to me as well. Apparently he was banged up his senior year, so that's why he wasn't flying, but man, and to top it all off, he went to the absolute perfect situation, right? He went to Miami, the one place that's going to develop and they're going to give him opportunities, and there's going to be people injured where he's going to be able to slide right in there. So those are the three for sure. Who else are we missing now for the rookies?
I think when Derek Lively got drafted by Dallas, I said that would be a great fit for Derek and Dallas because you need that rim-running guy who could catch lobs, great. And he's been playing really great. And Brandon Miller has been, you know, going under the radar a little bit, but he's solid. I think he's going to be one of those guys like PG-13 that really has no weaknesses on the floor. So I think those guys have been playing really well.
All right, I'll go with that. I'm trying to think, like, Scoot has not been great, and although I think he's perked up recently.
Actually, I watched them play Brooklyn yesterday. He didn't even get minutes at the end, you know? Didn't even – like, they had, a close fourth quarter and an overtime, and – he didn't even get opportunity, but Anthony Simons was killing, and Brogdon had big shots in overtime.
For sure, for sure. Brandon Miller, I feel like, yeah, he played at Alabama. I'm picturing he played in the NCAA tournament, I think, last year. That's what got him.
He was tough in college.
I like his game too. So, all right, there you go. That's a good breakdown for who can fill those last two spots. And I think we're getting ready. I mean, this is about an hour here, and really, really great show, Combo. If we have to go, you know, 2 weeks off to get a show like this, then maybe we have to do that more often.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't want to miss it. That's too long to go in between. But listen, we had a great show, great audience here too. So, really, really terrific.
Let's keep this time.
Yeah. And then someone's bringing up at the very end here about Mark Cuban. Did you see his little rant or his little thread about DEI?
No.
Diversity, equity, inclusion. Yeah, interesting. You know,
is this some political stuff we're about to get into?
It's a little political, but yeah. But you know, he folds it into how he, the, you know, either hiring practices or the way you manage a company. And there's no question that having those tenets of diversity, equity, and inclusion are really important ways to run your company if you want to run it successfully. So that's what Cuban was trying to say. And then, you know, Musk is was trying to say that that's all BS. So there you have it. Why, you know, Musk doesn't deserve to be focused on this show. But even though I might even drive one of his cars, I hate to say it, but I will say driving a Tesla is the way a car should drive.
Wow, that's awesome, Coach Nick. You know, sometimes if you disagree with somebody in certain ways, it's good to have that maturity to agree with them in other ways. And I have a book that over here by Jordan Peterson, and one of the chapters is called Abandon Ideology. And that's what I do, Coach Nick.
You actually put money in the Jordan Peterson's pocket combo?
Why does everything have to be so political with you? He has great thoughts.
No, he doesn't. Jordan Peterson.
Have you ever read his books?
I haven't read his books, but I certainly have to deal with listening to him talk ad nauseum, and we'll have to have a discussion at a later time. And we need some more enlightening, unfortunately. But we have another super chat. Let's get to that before we wrap up the show. Ruben Venancio, and by the way, we're wrapping it up. So, you know, super chat. If you want to throw one in there, last one, maybe we can get in there. But we're gonna finish with this one. Ruben, thank you so much. Hartenstein and OG are top five and plus minus since the trade. Do you think the Knicks should keep him as a starter even when Mitch returns? So we can find, there's a show that we did about Hartenstein. I mentioned Hartenstein and how great I liked him with the.
We both like him.
And he's that guy that no one wants to play, whatever. So I'm looking at OG's clips right now all morning. And, you know, there's good stuff in there, right? He's making an impact. But guess who's the guy who's making a much bigger impact in all these clips?
Hartenstein,
without question, defensively. So I think, and plus offensively.
And offensively, he's a connective piece.
Exactly.
He kind of plays that. He plays that Draymond type role.
A little bit, yeah, and much more than Mitch does. So 100%. Without question, yeah, he needs to start. When is Robinson come back?
Oh, he's done, I think, for a while.
Is he done for the season?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't have to worry about it then.
Man, and somebody got really hurt with the Nets. The kid that used to be in the G League Ignite, he's a big, forgot his name. He hurt his knee bad yesterday. I felt bad for him.
Not like Claxton or anything?
Nah, not Claxton.
Somebody say in the
chat. Huh.
Yeah, well, hopefully they, you know. By the way, ACL tears now, you come back better these days.
It's not fun, Coach Nick.
I hear you, but
I did one 2 years ago.
There's a light at the end of the tunnel.
There is.
All right, we have Drew Show, man. Drew, you're always there for us. I can't thank you enough. Take Combo just get fired. No, don't worry, Drew. We're going to straighten Combo out. We're going to make him, you know, we'll make him see the light. At any rate, so don't worry. But
Listen, guys, can I say one thing? I pay attention to the message, not the messenger. Always remember that about me. I have no alliance to people because of their thoughts. I just listen to their thoughts if they're good.
I mean, you've seen what he said about trans people, right?
I mean, no, I did not see anything else but what I read.
So you're operating out of okay. I see how this is working. All right. Well, we'll enlighten you a little bit more about Jordan.
I'm not in the political sphere, Coach Nick. I'm not at all.
All right. Well,
I am in the self-development philosophy. Evolutionary psychology basketball sphere.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to go. I got to record my political podcast in a little bit. So I got to.
Which is basically what that chapter is about, abandoning ideology and politics.
Okay. Not
putting a one size fits all suit on your thoughts. You know what I mean?
Right. That's okay. That's fine. But just you got to be informed, I think, if you're going to, you know, support people.
I said the message, not the messenger, is important to me.
Yeah, I have yet to see a good message from this person who is a caveman, Jordan Peterson, the way he views the world. So
it's good. You know, we're you're either getting better or you're getting worse, and we're hitting into new topics here on the B-Ball Breakdown live show.
Right. So there you go. But yeah, by the way, if you're interested in the political podcast, you can always fly over to the Muckrake podcast. Me and my partner, my other partner in crime, Jared, do a really good sort of deep dive and into the politics of today with a lot of historical context to try and draw, you know, a lot of where we were and how we got here today. So, you know, head over there if you're interested in there. It's a big audience as well there. So and kind of an interesting take and make you think about some things.
You know what's been on my thoughts recently, Coach Nate? Not to get a little philosophical with you.
But seeking the mic so we can hear you better.
Okay. So I feel like sometimes when people talk with enthusiasm, fluency, and they have credibility, people will just believe them because of that, even though what's coming out of their mouth is total nonsense.
Yeah, listen, if you try and like Vivek is like that, Ramaswamy, it will speak in some authoritative tone. But when you actually listen to what he's saying, it's like ridiculous and ill thought out and not really well thought out. But he's mastered the ability to look like he's smart, I suppose. So you gotta be aware of those people too.
Yeah, there's some former NBA players that fall into this category.
In terms of their work during live games or
does no, that- I mean, like they have credibility. They're speaking with great verbal dexterity. They have enthusiasm and obviously they have the credibility because they were former NBA players and they just make a ridiculous take that makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
And people will believe it because of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. We know what you're talking about, I believe. And,
we can talk about it after.
All right, man. Great show. Thank you everybody for being here. Thank you, Drew, and everybody else for the super chats. Really, really generous of you. Really helps us keep the lights on. And if you missed most of the show, or a lot of the show, or any of the show, and you want to hear it, it gets posted live, it gets posted immediately or soon after as a pod, audio-wise. So you can always check it out there wherever you listen to your podcasts. And thanks, Combo. It's great to have you back.
It's always great talking. Or
great to be back. I don't know, but either way. And don't forget, sports fans, at B-Ball Breakdown, not a channel, we're a conversation. You in?